Welcome to the Creative Entrepreneur Show. Brian, what do we have this week?
Hey, good morning, Rosh. Happy to be here. This week, I want to talk about one of our newest opportunities that we're adding for a lot of our clients, particularly our home service clients. We're talking about Nextdoor and some of the opportunities on that app. And then also, Rosh, is blogging dead?
Good question.
We're going to talk about that a little bit. What do you have going on?
I want to kind of jump off your topic last week, and I made this note during last week's show, client anxiety. In other words, anxiety from those clients. Now, last week you talked about having a big client, but some of them are big, but some of them are small, but they just bring you anxiety about your business. And, you know, as a creative person, you know, that easily done. So I want to talk a little more about that, dig into that topic. And from there, the next topic is just getting to know the expectations, understand what your clients want, what leads to the third thing, which can get into some tools, and that is organization. Being organized. I mean, a lot of times I have found that when I just take 5-10 minutes and organize a little bit, and believe me, I am not an organizer. I am as creative and everywhere as you can possibly be. But when I do that, I find things a lot better in the long run. So we'll dig into that, but let's get into your first topic, Brian.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks, Rosh. So a new opportunity, an area that is not overly saturated yet, especially, you know, say I'm coming from the perspective of being a social media manager here. And a lot of my clients are in the home service world. So, you know, we've got a painter, pest management, different things like that. And the app Nextdoor has really yielded some good success in terms of getting, you know, direct clients, getting really meaningful clicks. You know, you don't have to get nearly the quantity of clicks on Nextdoor to get a conversion than you do on other places like, say, Facebook or Instagram. Right. So what's nice about this is you can really direct your messaging to be local. So, you know, when we run an ad, you know, just in one town, we're saying, hey, attention, Livonia residents, this is, you know, your neighbors are saving money doing this or that. Putting these campaigns up, and they're starting to be successful quickly. So it's definitely a source to go to if you've felt frustrated trying to market yourself, being a really small, you know, any sort of service company. So say if you're trying to start something out and you think you got to go to Facebook right away, maybe try Nextdoor first. What we've found is the interface is pretty easy to use. Certainly if you're ready to, you know, if you've used anything as complex as Meta Business Suite or Facebook Ads Manager, you'll find that Nextdoor, it's kind of a breeze. It's really simple to set it up and, you know, how exactly you want to target people. And it's very location-based. So there's a lot of trust because, you know, like the app says, Nextdoor. So it's all about neighborhoods, and you're able to really get good penetration to the right people in the right area. Have you had any success? Have you done anything on Nextdoor?
I have not done anything. I've heard more and more in our networking groups, people saying, hey, if you see something on Nextdoor, obviously more organic approach. And when you started talking about it, I was going to say, what about ads? But obviously that's what you're talking about. And my next question, of course, now is what's the price range? I mean, how is it, you know, financially, what kind of a ROI or what kind of a spend do you think you need to get some sort of success?
Yeah, it was cool. They, when you got to the last step of the promotion, they give you how much you want to spend a day. You know, the low amount, I think it was like $9 a day or $15 a day was the minimal or the medium. That's the word I'm looking for that they suggest. And then, you know, you could turn the tap on as much as you want, but, you know, I don't think they want you spending hundreds a day on there because there's only a certain number of people that you can get to in that neighborhood. Right. So that might be too much. So, you know, where you can go on Facebook and you could spend thousands, tens and hundreds of thousands, or on LinkedIn, especially, you know, where you got to minimally spend $10 a day. This is a spot where, you know, you can be as low as $9 a day on a promotion and really hitting your local neighborhood, you know, pretty hard.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really a good suggestion, especially for local creatives, people who are trying to provide a service to their community, maybe have a small storefront or work out of their house and just want to start building a local business and build relationships. So that's nice. That's a good example.
Yeah, thank you. Especially if it's like a unique service or somebody's trying to develop their own, you know, industry and doing something. That's a great place to start. So, all right, let's throw it on over to you. I really want to hear what you have to say about
client anxiety. I mean, we talked about having that big client, and quite often that brings that anxiety. But there are also clients who are just on you, you know, are just not stopping and not thinking, you know, it's like, let me do my job. And quite honestly, often that affects your job and you make decisions based on what the client is asking or saying. And even getting into the areas of those clients, and I believe we talked about this last week, those clients that kind of push you in a direction that you probably wouldn't have gone, except they're important in terms of financial, or even just having them, sometimes having that client, the name attached to your name has benefits. That can be important too. So you'll do those little things and that can bring anxiety because you're not the professional in that area, and also can hurt your reputation. So I think taking control of that, understanding that you need to sometimes say no. And actually, that's getting to kind of a topic I was going to talk about before. I was thinking about for this show was getting to know. I had a note getting to know, but I had K-N-O-W and then versus N-O. And I think I want to talk a little bit about that when it comes to those expectations. Over time, you'll start to understand what types of clients bring that anxiety. And I think, again, back to your point, usually it's the big money ones and trying to avoid that. Or if you can do what I have done as often as I can, not always successfully, but as often as I can, make that client gravy and just stock that money away if you can. In other words, if you can avoid it, don't hire more people or buy more things to satisfy the need just because you can, you know, more tools. Just let that client be as much gravy as possible. That way, if they go away, you're not going to be devastated. And that will loosen up that anxiety of worrying about them going away. And if you can just learn to be okay knowing ahead of time that most likely that client will change, that client will go away, you'll feel a little bit better knowing you've done the right things, knowing that that's eventually going to happen. You're going to make decisions around that, probably in a way that's going to benefit you in the long run. In other words, you're not going to stop looking for other clients, and you're not going to stop trying to serve the smaller clients that eventually could grow and become bigger clients. Right. Any thoughts?
Absolutely. Yeah. I've got a lot to say on this because we deal with clients all across the spectrum. And when we first meet them, there are definitely certain red flags that we're looking for in, you know, down to their personality types. You know, certainly we're not looking for the heavy micromanager. Somebody needs to trust what we're doing and our process. And what we also see is that sometimes these micromanagers, they can be very short-sighted in their, you know, immediate goals. I remember we added a client a couple years ago, and we put up their first post at 7 p.m. on a Friday. And I had an email at 9 p.m. saying, "Hey, Brian, no new orders yet. What's going on?" And
how dare you?
Yeah. I'm like, you know, we tried very hard to be as clear as possible when we signed this client to set the expectations. And that I want to throw, you know, I know that's your second topic, so yeah. I think it ends really well right into there. We set that expectation of, you know, what it is our service is to be providing and when you should, you know, see something back from it. And if you're seeing too many of these red flags too early and you can't talk to your client and get them, you know, understanding what your success is, then you might need to, you know, tell that client no in certain things and maybe even, you know, break up that relationship. So setting expectations, throw it on back to you.
Yeah, actually, I think you have a next topic, and I want to throw it back to you, throwing back to me.
All right, sounds good. So I've read a lot of articles, and I've heard a lot of back and forth, especially since AI has been so, you know, getting so popular, that the effectiveness of blogging is dead, and is original writing dead? And there's a lot of thoughts to be had with this, and you know, AI, it certainly can be used as a tool to help people write, but it can't be something that's 100% trusted word for word, where you just go and copy and paste and put it up. There is still, you know, good writing required to have effective blogging. And, you know, I know that the quantity of blogs on websites are going up, you know, through the roof. Yep. Because there are tools to create a lot more. So more than anything, I think it's a requirement. It's a necessary evil that you have to be doing it because everybody else is doing it. On the SEO side of it and, you know, the website side of it, what are your thoughts on, you know, when you're building, say, you know, a website for someone and trying to get SEO and then doing blogging and using those keywords, you know, what are you seeing on your end?
So the most effective thing with blogging is when you can bring something new and important to the table, insight, statistics, observations, trends, things that honestly the AIs are going to pick up later anyway and use. I have found, for example, that when I created the Pricing for Photographers Guide back in 2011, it went well. It did great. And then the next year I did 2012, 13. I just did every year and updated, made it longer. I got up to about, I think, 10,000 words by the time I was done. Every year, just making it a little bit bigger, but not stopping. And that's something we've talked about before with repurposing and updating. There's still going to be high value because if you can build community around it through your social, and let people know that's you, that's your opinion. People are going to you as the expert for your opinion. Now, if you just start throwing AI stuff up there generically, it's not going to be, it's going to be generic. As we talk, say, write about a rock, great. You know, it's going to write about a rock and it's going to be very, you know, not so creative. Again, garbage in, garbage out. You could write a really good blog post, 80-90% AI with a little editing, if you gave it a really creative topic idea in which it has to pull from many different sources, and it has never really been positioned that way. So there's still a lot of creativity. Either you write it or they write it, and probably it needs to be a combination. But if you want to make blogging work for you, it needs to be a combination of social and you really putting out your ideas and sometimes outright being vulnerable in what you're presenting or very insightful information about the statistics and trends that you see or experiences even. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, essentially, as long as the content is there and it's quality and, like you said, it's insightful, it's something new, then it's still going to carry its weight and going to be effective. So,
yeah, absolutely. It may be harder to organically find your community around a blog today. You know, we've gotten away from the blog and the community is now developed on YouTube, Instagram, and so forth at a high level. But it is still possible, and you can still use social to drive people that way.
Perfect. And would you say still just on the SEO side for, you know, using keywords, it's still as effective as it's?
Absolutely. But again, you're competing. Think of it this way. Let's say everybody wants, you know, you have a dog training business, you know, or, you know, photography business. Okay, if you're going to talk about very basic stuff on your blog about photography or dog training or painting, you know, the thing is, so is everyone else.
Right.
And if it's not that better or longer or in depth or insightful, it's not going to rank. Now, there is value in terms of maybe the links, the relevant links, if it gets indexed. Yes, yeah. There's some value to those links from the indexing, internal linking. As long as those pages are indexed initially, then you're good. Then it's being used as a tool. It's generic, but it has a function. But if it is to drive the traffic organically to that page for an SEO value, then yeah, you got it. You got to step up the game a lot.
Cool. All right. Throwing it back to you with setting up those client expectations.
Yeah. You know, expectations can really help tamper down that anxiety topic that we mentioned before. But, you know, we also talked about blogging just a moment ago, of course. And it reminded me years ago, there was a lawyer that we worked with, and he wanted us to start blogging for him. You know, we told him it's going to be helpful for SEO. And so it took about 2 weeks, and we finally got that post up. And to your example, days later, he's like, how come I'm not getting any more traffic? How come I'm not getting more calls? And we said, well, that's just one post. He's like, you mean I have to do another one? We have to do this again? And so in other words, he didn't realize it's a campaign, but that was our fault. That was our fault. We did not present the expectation of what will need to be done. We just talked about blogging like everybody knew what we meant. And I think that's often the case. You have to say, look, this is what I do, and I do it well. These are the things I do. And if you need some of this or that, I have great referral sources. You know, I do advertising, right? Google ads. Well, then why can't I do Facebook ads? Well, I could, but I got a great referral partner to do that. Let them do the best job they can do, and not, you know, diversify my my attention in a way that may be harmful to other clients. So I think for the most part, setting up those expectations will help bring the anxiety level down. Let them know what will happen if, one, they go beyond the scope. Scope creep is a real thing. That's a real topic. And then letting them know what will happen. And if you've not, maybe send them, and I know we've talked about this, send them an invoice for the additional work, but give them credit. But right. Show them how much it is. You did an hour worth of research and activity. This is how much it cost above and beyond what we normally do. I gave you credit this time. You know, you're a good client. In the future, this is how much it would cost if you'd like us to do more. And so those kinds of expectations throughout, not punishments, but just setting up expectations about how this relationship should go.
Right. So, and reminders of what those expectations are. Sometimes you'll get a sense from a new client, especially you can feel that you're getting a little anxiety from them, that maybe it's time to be proactive and send them. Say, hey, you know, before they give you that email of, hey, why haven't I seen anything? You send them the email of, hey, first campaign is out. We're 3 or 4 days in. We've already generated X number of clicks, this number of impressions, and, you know, stay in front of it. And, you know, that kind of leads into your final topic of just being organized and what systems do you have in place to follow up with clients and stuff like that. That's what we found, you know, in our company. I've got a really, really good office manager, super organized, and she's really good at, managing that communication. And we talk when we onboard every client of, you know, how many touch points do we think this client's going to need per month? And then we're, you know, able to kind of gauge how much we need to reach out. So that's one of the things we do to stay organized. What do you have going on?
So I think tools can be very helpful, but just having that mindset of, look, I'm going to, one, go through a process and have a process, write that process out, and just know it. I mean, some processes can be very simple and some can be more complex. I prefer the simple because there's less to mess up and it's easier to go through. I mean, some people like creating list after list after list of all the check boxes, you know, hey, I love checking boxes, and here's, you know, breaking out an action that could be one line is now six. That's fine if that's your way of doing it. For me, I don't like it. So you have to be honest about yourself. But you should have, you know, your steps. Here's the first thing I have to do no matter what. And then to the next spot, here's the next step. So it could be 3, 4, 5 steps in your process. But you can use tools. I'm pretty old school with Basecamp. It's been around a long time. But there's some others out there. I believe is ClickUp is one. I've seen that one bouncing around. Trello is still popular for those kinds of things. So my question to you is, what have you used or do you use in your business to keep your team organized or even the organization between you and a client?
Good question. I'm very much like you, where I'm a creative and it's tough to stay organized. I find that I'm, with the age that I am, I call myself an elder millennial. And and what that means is I blend old school and new school to where I use, you know, my calendar and other things on, you know, my kind of G Suite tools. But past that, Rosh, I write stuff down, buddy.
Oh, good for you. He's holding up his actual paper calendar. Nice. Yes. Very yeah, nice. I'm highly impressed.
I put it on my electronic calendar, but, you know, so let it be written, let it be done. I've got to write stuff down, and it clicks in my brain better when I do it that way. I found that, you know, even when I was back in school, I would take notes during class, and instead of studying, all I'd have to do is just rewrite my notes. And nice. Then it's in there. So, that's how my brain works. And past that, we are very fortunate in our company, Great Scott Social Media, to have who I just mentioned, you know, 2 minutes earlier, a really good office manager who, you know, she's the one who will, you know, create all of our systems, all of our sheets. We've got this master roles sheet in our Google suite for our company. And that's my advice is if you're not organized, hire an organized person.
Yes. That's a good point. Yeah, we use sheets too all the time. You know what the because expectations go through to your team too, and what needs to be done each month or each week or each day, whatever it is. However you work, if you have a team, even if it's only one other person, you have a team, and having that communication flowing is so important. All right. Good show. A lot of interesting topics, I think, that are valuable digging in for creative entrepreneurs. And if you are interested in specific topics, you can head on over to creativeentrepreneurshow.com. And we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great. Yeah, we hope to hear from all the listeners. Thank you, everyone who has tuned in thus far. And again, we're rounding the corner. Episode number 500 is coming up. We're going to do something special, I promise.